Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this September the 16th on the West Coast, now September the 17th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to also welcome those listening in around the world on Wind Talkers Radio Network, and we appreciate you broadcasting the show either live or in an archive. And BBS is proud to have you as a partner during this broadcast. Well, there's a lot going on, and then there's nothing going on. The fear-mongering emails are out there. Everybody's worried about this and that. They jump from one House resolution or one Senate bill to another. And the corruption goes on and on and on. And I suppose, and I guess we could all suppose it's going to keep happening. So we just bear and grin, I guess. And pray that something miraculous will actually happen. And some people will start waking up. We are getting an indication that people are waking up. The numbers on the short-legged Mac Daddy's popularity have plummeted even further. Of course, you know, these are polls, so they're designed for mind control. They come out of the Tavistock Institute. They developed the concept of a poll. So we need to remind ourselves about that. Nevertheless, if you go around just talking to your own friends, as tonight's guest has done, you're going to find that there's a very small percentage of people that support what's going on. And, of course, their support would have to be based upon ignorance, wouldn't it? Knowing what we know. Well, with that, I'm going to bring on tonight's guest. He hosts his own show on two networks. And the show is called A Marine's Disquisition, heard on Wind Talkers Radio Network and on blogtalkradio.com. In fact, I hear it's the number one show on both of those networks. And I'm proud to have him as a friend, former U.S. Marine from 1967 through 1977, and fellow talk show host, researcher, my good friend Drew Malone Raines III. Drew, welcome to the show.
Yes, and to all my Marines around the world. Semper Fi! And I'm proud to be on your show. This is one of my long days. I do four shows today.
Oh, man.
And it gets a little hairy out there. And your commentary right there was right on point. We have good days and bad days, and we've got good news and bad news and lots of news and no news. And yeah. I'll be honest with you. When I don't hear about news, I get worried. A lot of people say that if there's no news is good news. In my world and in the sovereign citizenship world of all the Americans out there that care about liberty and justice and freedom, even with a license, when you're not hearing about what's going on, you have to back up. And right now, the poison pill stalking horse attack by this neocon empire that many of us refer to as the United States of America is literally flexing their muscles against you and me, the sovereign people, with S-3767, with the companion bill S-510, introducing severe criminal penalties for adulterating food. That means anything you do with food you grow, like you want it to grow faster, you want it to grow better, you put fertilizer on it, that's adulterating, which the FDA means selling supplements. You know, if you're a master herbalist or an herbalist like Wendy Wilson the Power Herbs, or Wendy Wilson at the Herb Shop in Arizona, or Wendy Wilson Nature's Herbs of America, located in Seattle, Washington, or Mary Joan Mondello, located in Maine, and I can name several hundred herbalists around America. If they sell supplements, the food fascist battle comes to their door.
Yeah, well, it's isn't it just one thing after another? I mean, they bring something out, we sort of deal with it. They bring another thing out, we deal with it. They bring another one out, we deal with it.
And what's really bad with this S510 and S3767, which I'm going to be doing my show tomorrow on in depth, is this macabre of leadership in Washington is about to become a lame duck Congress and a lame duck Senate with a lame duck president and with no checks and balances.
It's been
There's
lame.
Not going to be any checks and balances on what's going to happen. We're going to kick them out on November the 2nd. They're going to get these neocons, these fascists, these socialist Nazis are going to get removed, the vast majority of them. And my problem, Don, and the problem of all God-fearing Americans is that these laws like S-510 and S-3767 are going to put people in jail for doing what? For growing too much food. For growing too much food? We already have one man down in Georgia. He's going to jail or pay a $1,500 fine. Because he's growing too much food on his property.
Yeah, I mean, this is insane. Can you imagine somebody off planet watching this through a TV screen? You know, like you do a security camera. You know, they're watching what's going on in the governments around the world, and they're saying this is crazier than any sitcom or any sci-fi movie.
They ask, why are these people allowing this? You know, these people off world. Why are these people allowing this?
Well,
if it wasn't so funny, okay, I'd cry because that's how dangerous it is, huh?
Yeah. Well, I've been trying to I have been sort of leading people in a different direction, okay, because the mainstream media is absolutely worthless. I mean, if you put their pictures on a new style of toilet paper, people wouldn't use it, okay? It would stop up the sewers anyway. So what use are they? We've done show after show on mind control, on propaganda, on all of this stuff, and there are just some people that are just joined at the hip with their TV set and the idol worship that comes out of the TV set and out of movies and all the electronic devices that we use. And, you know, there comes a point where you say, what good would it do to wake those people up? I mean, they're so far behind the eight ball as it is. Having them awake and just going nuts is really counterproductive in a way, if you understand my meaning.
Oh yeah,
they're too far behind. There's people that have been studying this. If they've been studying for a year, 2 years, they're pretty awake and they know that something's terribly wrong, and they see a lot of the things that are wrong, and they're all asking for answers. You're not going to get a leader out of corruption. You're just going to get more corruption. That's a very simple statement that we could make to look at the system the way it is, because it's designed to do and be what it's doing and what it is. So we've got to educate ourselves as to what's going on ultimately, who's pulling the strings. And I've done a series of shows this whole week on those beings. They're not human. And people see signs of this. I was talking to someone today that has a friend that went to school with Al Gore. It's interesting. This person has been looking at recent pictures and video of Al Gore and says, that's not Al Gore. That's not the Al Gore I went to school with. I mean, people get older and they change, but that's not the same person. Not at all.
I got a friend that bumped into me at the VA the other day who happened to be up here from Shreveport, Louisiana. He's really not a friend, but he's a person that knew me and knows me and knew me quite well at C.E. Byrd High School in Louisiana. He remembers that I went off to Vietnam, but he thought I had died in Vietnam or later on, because I didn't come back to Louisiana. Well, I didn't come back to Louisiana for over 5 years. I didn't come home for 5 years after I got out of the military because I wanted to see the world. I wanted to see America. So I wanted to see what I had almost died for. And I drove an 18-wheeler across the road in all states except Hawaii and Alaska. Of course, you know, if I'd have been able to drive an 18-wheeler to Hawaii, that would have been a long trip. But I don't think I could have gotten an oxygen tank to run on the ground far enough in the ocean. But he said that he said, "Hell, man, you look just like you did in high school, except you ain't got no hair." I said, "Yeah, I shave it 3 times a day."
Well, yeah, and, we even remarked about that today too, because my hair is gray, but I have hair, you know. So
I want to be honest with everybody. You know, somebody asked me the other day, "Why are you bald?" And I said, "Well, first of all, I take a razor, and if I don't shave for 2 days, I take a just a regular straight razor, a triple edge razor blade, and I take a product called aloe vera gel, tropical sun aloe vera gel, and I rub my entire head with this gel, and then I take the razor and I shave. And then I'll use the electric razor twice a day on my hair, on my head. And like most people shave a mustache, I shave the top of my head. It is one of those things. I just cannot get past going to a barber and giving a barber $20 every 2 weeks for a haircut. I got a Marine buddy that he only goes once a month, and after 2 weeks he looks ragged, really ragged, and his wife's on his case. But it's $20 for a haircut. Well, that's $40 a month. That's $480 a year. Well, $480 a year to me, Don, I can pay my electric bill and my phone bill literally for 4 months. Well, maybe not 4 months, for 3 months. Okay? Because my electric bill and my phone bill, which includes my internet service, run me about $135 a month. Well, in 3 months, that's right. That's a little over $400. Well, that's 3 months of electricity and phone bill. I that's how close to the dollar I live, ladies and gentlemen. And I can buy tropical aloe vera gel for $1 at the Dollar Tree, and I can get 10 razors for $1. And then I have an electric razor that I charge. So that's why I shave, Don. It's not because I want hair. I, I look at it like if you don't, you either like me like I am or you don't like me at all, period. Kiss my grits.
Well, I'm going to change.
If you don't like it, turn it off.
I'm going to sort of transition to another topic here for a little bit, if I could.
Well, that's fine. I heard before we came on, you have an audio clip on that from a video, and I'd like for you to send that clip to me, if you wouldn't mind, please, so I can post it on my News and Views, because I've got a bunch of Marines that are listening here, and they all they can do is listen. And sometimes they don't get to hear the full rendition of what you're playing. That's why they want it on my the News and Views.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to play some clips from a talk that Michael Tesserian gave on the destruction of Atlantis. And he talks about some other things that sort of play into the scene that's going on here. Now, this is his information. We're not asking anyone to believe this, but at least consider this, because you're going to see some similarities in what he says here tonight on this show, and be able to compare it to some things that you've heard on Drew's show and on my show and a few others. So here we go, Drew, and we'll pause it occasionally and talk about this a little bit.
Comment? Disquisition?
Yes, sir. That's right.
All right.
We'll have a disquisition on evident foot.
Okay, Zeth, let me know how I'm doing. Thank you.
All right. Okay. Here we go. Well, I'm waiting.
I don't know. I don't know. Matthew's over here, and he says,
"Yeah,
Larissa does 10 times better job than that."
Oh. Here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for coming to this workshop. We have Michael Tesserian that will be giving you a whole focus on the destruction of Atlantis. And my name is Ruben Uriarte. I'm the State Director of Northern California MUFON. I'd like to welcome all of you. Michael will be focusing this workshop, as I mentioned earlier, the destruction of Atlantis. Was Atlantis really a center of advanced human civilization? What if Homo sapiens are not indigenous to Earth? Is the new order really something new? Why is the bloodline so crucial to the monarchs of the Earth? Who was Merlin? The Mahabharata in India. That's what the Spanish twist. The Trojan and Celtic Wars were all going on relatively simultaneously. Who are the fallen angels that are spoken in the Bible and the Dead Sea Scrolls? Michael will clarify once and for all who they are and how humanity has been affected. Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Tesserian.
Thanks again for joining me for the second part of this presentation. And give me a minute, we'll connect with where we were, the previous one. No, it's fine, I turned it off. Well, I'm fishing through the files.
This makes for good radio.
Ain't it?
Okay. I'd like to come to the synopsis so we can get to the matter of how much influence there has been in our society from these visitations and the coming of the gods. Like I said before, that more than 30,000 written documents from all over the world tell of advanced beings who either came to Earth or were already living on the Earth. This is from a good book called Past Shock by Jack Barringer. Now, the word Nephilim that's used in the Bible to describe these beings really means those who were cast down, not those who came down, okay? Sometimes they mistranslate that. It's those who were cast down. Difference of influence. In a book called the Srimad Bhagavatam of India, there's a quote that says, "The tales of a demon race which invaded the three planetary systems. Opposing the demons was the Hindu god Shiva, who possessed a powerful weapon that he fired at the enemy airships from his own." Now, it's interesting that the Mahabharata, the Veda, and the Bible, many of the references that, of course, spoke about this were just taken out. The Mahabharata, when Western scholars, even recently, like the 19th century, when they had to go through that book, or the Bhagavad Gita, and translate it into English, do you know that any time they came across a passage like this, they just left it out? They didn't even bother translating it, because, of course, they knew what it would mean, it would represent. Then we turn to the Bible again. We have a statement that says, "They come from the far country, from the end of heaven, to destroy the whole land. Who are these that fly in a cloud as the doves to their windows?" Now, that's right. Who are these personages? I'd like to go into that right now with you and explain something of the background of our history that has been kept from us. It turns out that about 50,000 years ago, the Sumerian records always talk about 400,000 years ago. If you listen to Zachariah Sitchin when he's talking about the Anunnaki and he's translated the ancient monuments there and the scripts and the cylinder seals, he tends to put the emphasis on 400,000 years ago. And I tend to have some problems with that because it's not really corroborated by many of the other peoples and tribes and their writings. The Celtic peoples, the tendency is to believe it's about 50,000 years ago that our planet was actually visited by aliens. And the stories of the legends, when you research them enough and find out what was going on, you actually discover that a race of beings who had been expurged from their own planetary system somewhere else, some people say Sirius, you know, others are talking about the Pleiades, there's different philosophies. They had been expunged from their own system in an Armageddon that they had been having on their planet. And they left, and they were being pursued, and they were extremely advanced people. They're where our technology is, maybe even 1,000 years and more in advance. And these beings had space travel, and the stories talk about how they left their own planetary system, and they were being pursued, this adversarial power, you see. And it somehow says that they strayed into our solar system while they were being pursued, and they were ahead of their pursuers. And what they did was that they landed, or at least pretended to land, on another planet that used to be in our solar system. And we'll come to that. Now, we have information. Yeah. All down through society, as many other scholars and websites have gone into. Excuse me. About strange vehicles and visitations. Like in the book of Ezekiel, there's that famous quote that you've heard a lot. "Now as I looked upon the living creatures, I saw four wings upon the ground, one by each of them, of the living creatures, with their four faces, the appearance of wheels, and their composition was like the color of shiny amber. And all four wings had but one likeness, and their composition was like a wheel in the middle of a wheel." This is in the Bible, in the book of Ezekiel, about a vision that this prophet is meant to have had. And we have artifacts from all over the world that bear incredible resemblance to modern-day spaceships. I'm showing you this for a reason, because some of you have seen this stuff before on other websites, but I've got a particular interest to explain why there is this similarity. And spacemen and astronauts. Because in a lot of the programs that deal with this, they do tell you what, they show you these things, but they never go into why. Have you ever noticed that after an hour-long, multi-million-dollar program, they still leave you with more questions? So we've got to realize that just displaying the facts and looking at the anomalies is one half of it, but then we need somebody to come along and give the answers, and that they will not do right now on mainstream media. Here we have again some sort of celestial scene and with some what looks like crafts flying. And then, of course, the temple at Abydos in Egypt, you have carvings on the walls that look like submarines and helicopters, very similar to what we have today. And many throughout the world, Vimana is a term that the Indians have used, Shem is a term that the Israelites have used, We have different visitation witnesses. Now, as these beings were entering into our solar system, they did land on a great planet that was in our solar system. It was called Tiamat by the ancients. Some people have also called that Lucifer, and others Luna, not connected to our moon. This was a gigantic planet that was mostly oceans, by the way. And it was its atmosphere was so luminescent that people called it the second sun. That's how it got the name Lucifer. In fact, another term that they often used was Phaeton, right? The Greeks called that planet Phaeton. And it wasn't a sun, but it was a planet that whatever atmosphere it had, whenever the sunlight was, you know, beaming on it, it has great radiance. And all down through society, you'll hear in the ancient legends the terminology that relates to the second sun or the second orb in our solar system. And these beings that entered into our solar system made it appear, or that they had landed on this planet. They even set up a dummy base to send pulsations, electromagnetic pulsations out. And when their pursuers arrived into our solar system, they detected this and basically thought that their adversary was on this planet of Tiamat. And guess what they did to it? They completely incinerated the entire planet of this Tiamat. And in many works, you know, there's references to this. They say this planet split in half. One part just plunged into the sun. Another part became our moon. Some people even say part of Tiamat became the Earth, but that's not really true. So this entire planet was destroyed, and all of its content is up there now as what we call the asteroid belt, exactly. And Charles Fort, who's an American suppressed writer, not too well known by people, made a life study of all these things that have to do with anomalies like fallen ice, you know, these huge chunks of ice and frozen fish and all sorts of strange things that fall from the sky. It's never been properly explained, and they thought he was a crank. The point is that they're not coming from our planet. Sometimes when our orbit of our planet, you know, has times when it comes very close to the asteroid belt and the debris that's up there from this lost planet. And when it does, the magnetic attraction of the Roche field brings some of this content through into our atmosphere again. And that's why even live fish can fall. Because I'm talking about this destruction of this planet probably happened about 50,000 years ago. And it was an ocean planet. Tiamat was an ocean planet, so most of that is ice, as most of the asteroid belt is ice. Those are frozen oceans. And even its contents will fall to our Earth live thousands of years later because of the nature of the refrigeration. And then it's reactivated by our Earth atmosphere. And every time this stuff happens, and people all over the world have seen this happen in front of them, and it's never been properly explained. So these beings actually did not go to Tiamat. They actually landed on our planet, which was mostly covered in forests at that time. And it was five different continents, not what we know today. And they went into the tunnels that people like Eric von Däniken, you know, have discovered and amazed at how these tunnels could be cut. And some say that they even went under the oceans. Like in Samuel here it says, "And the king said to her, 'Be not afraid, for what sawest thou?' And the woman said unto Saul, 'I saw gods ascending out of the earth.'" In Bulwer Lytton, his book, The Coming Race, he says, he describes the existence of a utopian society of advanced beings who live in tunnels and caverns beneath the surface of the earth in a land called the Vrilya. These beings, known as the Anna, were forced into the inner earth because of earth changes, specifically a flood which destroyed their civilizations. Okay. So again, information about Hollow Earth. And by the way, Hollow Earth is a fascinating subject if ever there was one. This is Admiral Byrd, you may have heard of, who flew across the North Pole and discovered that there was these caverns that, again, are not on any physical maps. For those who don't know about this, they should check into the concept of Hollow Earth. In the book of Job, it says, "Dead things are formed from under the water, and the inhabitants thereof." And then when you look to the comment about this, it says, "The place where the Rephaim stay, which is beneath the waters." Dead things, in Hebrew, is Rephaim, the offspring of the fallen angels, akin to the Nephilim. But again, just for now, let's notice that they're talking about living under the waters. You know, the Celtic legends speak of exactly the same thing, how that when the gods, the negative beings, come to attack the gods, they come from under the ocean. It's another thing that people just throw across the room and go, "What is this nonsense?" when they read it in a legend. They don't take it seriously. Now, these beings came to our planet, and after they knew that their pursuers had basically gone, they emerged out onto the surface of the earth and set up their headquarters on the continent of Appalachia. And the headquarters was called Atlantis. Atlantis is not a continent. This is another piece of disinformation that's been brought out. There was five gigantic continents in those days. Tyrrhenia, Beringia, Oceania, Fennoscandia, and Appalachia. And Appalachia was in the north. It's where, you know, North America, Alaska is, or where the Arctic is now, right across past Greenland, Iceland, into where north of, up of England, and then into Sweden, and into Siberia. That whole area, but specifically the part between, say, Greenland and England, this is where Atlantis was, on a gigantic continent. You could walk the whole way. And the headquarters of these alien beings is what we've come to call Atlantis. And when they set up this advanced, they had all their technology with them, spacecrafts and all sorts of super technologies. Remember Superman, the movie? How when they watch Superman, when he goes up to his, you know, his oracle or his tabernacle, his temple, don't they show him going north, up into the Arctic, into the snows, and then he goes into his precinct and it's all like a crystalline computer? Do you remember that? Superman from another planet? Yeah, somebody's trying to tell us things there. Anyway, these beings started to interact with us. Now, our planet, in the 65 million years or whatever we've been on this planet, Homo sapiens has been on this planet as hunter-gatherers, we probably have been visited enormous amount of times by cousins and brothers from other solar systems. But the policy of most of those groups has always been to come here, do your research, but not to interfere in the actual destiny of the indigenous peoples, the Homo sapiens and the Neanderthals and the Angus people that were on this planet. Not to involve yourself, and if possible, not even to be seen. Okay? But these beings who came here were what you would call in Milton, the fallen angels, better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. And they had an agenda that did want to interfere with the Homo sapien at that time. So they started to corral, and they started to research all of the life forms and all of the peoples of the earth at that time. And they started to corral, just like in the movie Planet of the Apes, they show this. They started to corral the people onto this place of Atlantis and started to check into their entire biology. And then at a certain point, thousands of years later, not immediately, because it takes time to set up all of these things, genetic changes were done. And the result being that almost all the original Homo sapiens were either changed, and those who weren't changed were killed or created into slaves and subsequently faded out. And the being that they created, we might want to term Homo Atlantis, a being that has pure alien DNA and has pure human DNA. Okay? Homo Atlantis, from which we are all descended. But the euphemism, or the poetic euphemism for these people, is called the Sons of the Serpent. Because, like I said, the original people were called the Brotherhood of the Snake, or the Serpent People. Not because they look like serpents, and we'll come to why they really were called the serpents in a minute. But their first progeny was called the Sons of the Serpent. And that's why we have in the Bible the term, it says, "And God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness."
Okay, Drew, I'm going to pause it there. I'm sure you're chomping at the bit to say something.
Chomping at the bit. I'm over here sawing logs trying to say something.
How does all this strike you so far?
This goes along with the show that I'm going to do on Sunday with the extraterrestrials and the Bible and Ezekiel. And this is an outstanding incorporated audio from a video link. I guarantee you, it's mind-boggling. When he said at the beginning there, he was talking about Ezekiel seeing these objects with a wheel within a wheel. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if stop and think about it. Drew,
before you go on, I need you to speak just a little louder. Get a little closer to your mic, if you would.
I can't get any closer.
That's good.
All right. Now, you get here, and you're looking into the mind of a man that doesn't even know what an airplane looks like, a balloon, has no idea of a tennis ball. Imagine not having any knowledge of anything that could possibly fly except a bird that has wings, or a bumblebee, or nature's bees. Bees have been around since before man, just recently. There was a discovery of a tomb in Egypt that the Pharaoh's tomb, they found beehives, honeycombs. Of course, the bees are dead because the area was over 5,000 years old, but they found honey. and they reconstituted it, and it was still edible. It was still good 5,000 years. Can you imagine a man 5,000 years ago that's never seen anything other than a bird fly trying to describe an intergalactical spacecraft, regardless of its shape, whether it's circular or cigar or whatever? He described it as a circular craft, much like a wheel within a wheel. Now, Don, the movie directors and producers have done a darn good job with Battlestar Galactica. And what is the name of that show out there? The crazy one here, just in the last 5 or 6 years, where the something stormtroopers.
Oh, Starship Troopers.
Yeah, Starship Troopers, where they got this one gunnery sergeant, United States Marine Corps, who knocks a captain, knocks a general out so he can become a private, so he can go out on the front line and fight these evil reptilians and from other planets that are trying to destroy Earth. It's a crazy little movie.
Oh, it's a great movie. There's a lot of truth.
But there's a lot of truth in that sucker.
Yeah. And there's a lot of subliminal suggestion, because the movie starts off where the North American Union is the union. And to be a citizen, you have to enlist in the military. And then you're a privileged person. Well, whether this planet is going to come under such an attack as in that movie is one issue, but this planet has already come under attack. And he's laying out the foundation that this has been going on for a long time. Is it any coincidence that some of our guests on our mutual shows have talked about underground bases and tunnels? And, you know, I've talked about underground or underwater bases as well. I mentioned that the last couple of nights. And this is in the Bible. This is in the ancient writings from all over the world. It's not a question of looking at the religion, per se, but the truth that's coming out and the history. And when you consider all the text that's been deleted, edited out of all of these historical books, and then you see the same examples in the hieroglyphics. I wish you could see the video that goes along with this, because he's showing the images as well. The delays, by the way, for the listening audience, are his, not ours, because he's trying to make sure that the visual presentation is synchronized with what he's saying. So he's fumbling around with some of his documentation and photographs and things like that. But it's very convincing when you see all of this together. But it's well delivered, and it fits with the things that we've been talking about. These are cycles. We always say that history repeats itself, and they use the same methods over and over again. They've led the Earth to destruction on numerous occasions. This isn't the first time that mankind is facing that. But the difference, I think, now, Drew, between any other time in the world's history, planet Earth's history, is that there is a spiritual awakening that's occurring that's going to have a tremendous impact on changing everything. Despite the corruption, despite that should say it all, I guess. You want to comment?
No, you're just right on. There's a spiritual awakening around the planet right now. I see it. Others see it. Friends of mine that live in Russia see it. People will comment that they're atheists only because they're not, they're believers of a creator. and there's no English way, there's no English term to translate their Russian dialect to say that they're a believer of a one true entity.
Mm-hmm.
And so they put something that translates to atheist.
Yes.
And a lot of people, I personally talked to three different Russian girls before I met Yevina. And those three women were all atheists, but they believed in an entity of a creator of the universe. So, you know, to me, they weren't atheists. And this is a very troubling time for Americans because here in the United States, America has fast become sheeple under a totalitarian government hell-bent on empire building for greed. For greed. We've got more oil in reserves just in the caverns of Louisiana to feed this industrial military complex for 100 years. We haven't even touched the oil reserves that are in Nevada, Utah, Montana, Alaska, and Texas. And nobody has even thought about drilling oil in the Pacific around Hawaii. Nobody. They're not even looking. And one of the largest oil reserves in the world is in the Prudhoe Bay, Alaska, in Gull Island. And geologists, 40 years ago, estimated the amount of oil that was in the reservoirs around Gull Island was 4 times greater than all of the oil reserves that they had calculated in Iraq, Iran, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Yemen, combined.
Mm-hmm. Well, the find in Colorado, I think it's called the Green River find, which is about 2 trillion barrels of shale oil. Okay, now that requires a different extraction process, but nonetheless, 2 trillion barrels.
But and why? What's the big deal here? Why are we burning fossil fuel? Nikola Tesla brought us inventions, more inventions than any 5 scientists of his time from the time he came on the front inventing, bringing his invention forward in 1890 to the time of his death in the 1940s.
Yes. Yes, that's true. Now, I'd like to play a little bit more of this. But I just want to make a quick comment. If you caught what he was saying, he mentioned the Vril, okay? That is the secret society that the Nazis were very interested in, and their crafts were focused around that. They named their ships the Vril, and then the model number after it. And, of course, what the average person saw and what's been talked about in history is the metaphysical arm of the SS, which was the Thule Society. And that has its roots all the way back to the days of Mongolia. Genghis Khan had a son named Thule.
Mm-hmm.
And so they do these ritualistic, symbolic naming of their organizations to represent these ancient concepts. So the information was there, and you mentioned Tesla. I basically put together the pipeline for how they stole his information and his technology and his inventions and his notes and his money and left the man impoverished. He should have been in the days that he was inventing all these things, he should have been the richest man on the planet, no doubt, just by his contributions. But I'd like to go back to this. I just wanted to make that one statement.
That's a good acquiescence right there.
Okay.
Very straight.
Let's
move forward some more of this because
yes.
I'm on board with you 100%.
Okay, here we go. This is Michael Tesarian continuing on the destruction of Atlantis and many hidden secrets about our past.
Right? They're telling you all about this.
Well, he decided he was going to get choked.
Matthew says that God needs a Larissa.
It's actually a mistranslation of a word that is actually more like our word, build or construct, you know? So this is what we also have the term, the firstborn. In the Bible, what we have to understand, because it also, think of it, why would the angel of death or God, like even in Herod, you know, and later on before in the Pharaoh's time, what would be the importance of going and killing the firstborn of your enemies? Sure, wouldn't it be smarter to go and kill your enemy and have done with it? Why are you going to wait to kill all his firstborns? See? And secondly, no such atrocity happened. There's never any record of any massacre of any innocents or anything like that in physical record at all. So the firstborn is another one of these cryptic terms, and it's a reference to the sons of the serpent race, also known as the children of the Elohim. Some people might want to call the original serpent masters the Jehovah clan, the term that's spoken of in the Bible, and others might want to call the first group, their firstborn, the Elohim. Now, Christians will not understand this. What are you talking about? There is a rule of thumb that you can use in the Bible to make things a lot easier, and that is whenever you're hearing a term like that, especially Adam and Eve and Jehovah and Elohim, try to think less of an individual and more as a race, okay, a group of people at least, and then things will start to be clear. Now, they created this firstborn to serve them, and they did it by genetically changing the human and alien DNA together at the place we call Atlantis. But as time went by, maybe hundreds of years, nobody knows exactly the dates. The original visitation, of course, was what? 50,000 years ago. And we have, from that time, a great deluge. Remember when the planet Tiamat was destroyed, it said as debris fell into the earth and created enormous cataclysms. But it didn't create a pole shift. It just created enormous cataclysms that changed the face of the earth forever. But at least that kind of contamination slowly did subside over time. It was devastating and many, many people died and lots of changes in the land. But it was not so awesome, you see, that over a few hundred years, a certain amount of normalcy did not come back. Because the earth has been visited by that kind of trouble many, many times. But anyway, when they created this firstborn, they sent the firstborn out to be their servants, to actually go out into the Garden of Eden, into Atlantis, Appalachia, and their territories that they were conquering, and do their physical work for them. But after a certain period of time, these sons of the serpent had the human DNA. And therefore they had the humanity, the humanism, and the sense of spiritual connectedness to things, that sensibility that their own fathers didn't have. And it dawned on these sons of the serpent that finally they realized, to cut a long story short, that they didn't want to serve these masters anymore because they probably didn't agree with them and didn't like doing this and didn't feel that they should be subservient. And it's interesting too because they had the high intelligence and the divine spiritual connection. So they left. They actually upped and left as a race. Probably not all of them, but whatever the group of these sons of the serpent, they actually exited out of Appalachia, out of Atlantis, and resituated their own civilization on the continent of Oceania, which we now call Lemuria, which is estimated to be where the Pacific is, you see. And they completely left, just exited out, leaving their alien fathers with a predicament of what to do. So what they did is they went back to the drawing board again to create another entity. Says, let us make him who shall nourish and sustain us. What shall we do to be invoked, to be remembered in earth? We have tried with our first creatures. Look at this. but we could not make them venerate us. So then let us try to make obedient, respectful beings who shall nourish and sustain us. This is from a Mexican book, the Popol Vuh. Do you know the conquistadors, how many books they burned? You want to know why? If this is one little piece of one little book, right? Think what those books really contained, and now find out why they were burned. The first creatures wouldn't do it, so we go to the second. Genesis, by the sweat of thy face will be thy bread until you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, for dust thou art, and to dust thou wilt return. Does that sound like God talking to somebody? Or is it more of human politics? And the Lord said, behold, the man has become one of us to know good and evil, and now lest he put forth his hand and take also of the tree of life and eat and live forever. Now, the interesting thing is that they did create another being, and that being they called the Adamic race, or we refer to now as the Adams, the Adam. But again, not an individual. The Adams and Eves were created, but they were called the Adamic race. And they had to think, when they created the second generation offspring, they thought themselves, what did we do the first time that was wrong? What we did the first time it was wrong is we gave the power to our first sons, the firstborn, the intellectual abilities and genius that we ourselves possess. And that's why they got all arrogant and took off. So the next time we make a group, our servants, we will literally dumb them down. We will close off the centers of the high intelligences that we have, the technological intelligences and so on. And, I mean, you can do that in a laboratory, a behaviorist laboratory now, just using the brain synapses. But they were doing it on a DNA level. So that's exactly what they did. They created a being whose intelligence level would be much more suppressed. And that was the Adamic race. And they sent them out to be the servants. And they had a feminine counterpart that could not at that time breed through mating. But they were feminine. The female versions. And the Lord said, look, the people are united, and they all have one language. Come on, let us go down, and therefore confound their language so they cannot understand one another's speech. Now, as I said, in the Bible, you'll hear certain terms, and you'll hear this term naked, that Adam and Eve went into the garden naked. Well, what does that mean, that God was wearing Levi jeans then, and everybody had clothes? The word naked is another, you know, euphemism, a cryptic euphemism in the Bible that refers to a state of being in intellectual ignorance, nakedness, into the garden in a naked state, meaning that they had suppressed intelligence. But in reduced intelligence of what, specifically? Remember how I just quoted those books where it says they cannot eat off the tree of life? Remember that? Well, the forbidden fruit, this term, the forbidden fruit of the tree of life, is another euphemism for the knowledge of human genetics. Because the tree of life symbol has always been the symbol for that, for what we call the caduceus of Hermes or the DNA spiral. In ancient times, it was known as the caduceus of Hermes, or before that, the tree of life, because that's exactly what it is. And they said it has its roots in the earth and its branches in heaven. And then later, that tree became known as the tree of good and evil. You know, and all the people who think they're into the occultism go, oh, the tree of good and evil, thinking that means something esoteric. Actually, it doesn't. This term does not refer to anything esoteric. It refers only to the two contingents or races in residence on this planet, both custodians and utilizers of the knowledge of genetics. The good and the evil, for want of a better term. It's their tree, meaning their knowledge. So naked and not being able to eat off the tree of life, not being able to eat off the fruit of the tree of life, is a euphemism for the Adamic race not having the intellectual ability that their masters had, the high scientific technical knowledge of reproduction on that level, and the science of biology and technology. And that's what these symbols all refer to. Do you know in the Kabbalistic tree of life, anybody familiar with this? There are 22 paths. 22? Anybody in the genetics know the number 22 and the chromosomes on the DNA? So when we read about the forbidden fruit, we've got to ask ourselves a question. This symbol is even styrated in the symbols of the chakras, or an analog to that, right? The forbidden fruit relates to genetics. If it doesn't, why is a technical company that expressly involves itself in technology having the same symbol from the Book of Revelation? And that they're not the only corporation to do this. There's many others. So back to like when we did in the first presentation, this concept of the serpent in the garden that has at least come down to us through the Bible. This concept of Adam and Eve being visited by a serpent. Now, the interesting thing is that as this Adamic race was slaving away, with no trade unions and no extra time and anything like that, overtime, working for their hidden masters, these Atlanteans, this became known to the sons of the serpent who were living on Lemuria. Because they were probably keeping tabs, you know, watching what their forefathers were doing. And they then had this predicament, didn't they? Because they said, look, you know, we got free from these masters. We're doing all right over here with our high civilization and great culture. But they've created a second race, but they've used also the human DNA. So in a way, aren't they our cousins? Right? Aren't the human, the Adamic race now cousins to us? But they're in a dumbed down state. So they said, we're in a bit of a predicament. What would happen if we went back in surreptitiously to Eden, into Atlantis, and told them that, and tried to get them to come with us? And that is exactly what happened. The serpent entered into the garden and discoursed with the Adamic race. But the stories of the ancient legends say that the Adams, the male ones, didn't kind of get it. It didn't make too much sense to them, but the Eves really got into it. Right? And they were very responsive to what the sons of the serpent were saying. And so would you, because they said that they were comely and attractive, had magical powers, tremendous intellect, but a divine spiritual ray, right, of great wisdom. And they came unto the daughters, and they talked to them. And the daughters of Eve said, hey, this looks like a good deal. Let's get going. Pack up. And they dragged the Adams with them. I've had some women say, why did they even bother doing that? But you know how things are, right? So anyway, a lot of them did leave. To cut a long story short, because the Eves understood this concept, somehow they started to exit. Again, maybe not all, right? But enough of a large contingency exited with the sons of the serpent. And the sons of the serpent said to them, know ye not your gods? What we can do, you can do also and more. So the coming of the serpent into the garden has been completely put before us opposite than what it was, for good reason, and it doesn't make any sense. But the fact that it hasn't made any sense doesn't seem to bother anyone. Right? Because women are suppressed, they hold no office, everything works. But the very fact of the tree and the serpent, like I said before, goes back to the whole concept of Egypt and the mysteries of what? This very symbol of the tree and the serpent is your DNA and the initiation back into that knowledge that was sequestered from you. And isn't it interesting, scientists will not like this one, isn't it interesting that women were the ones who took to that knowledge first? Isn't it always been that science was a male patriarchal thing that's been put before us? Science and the matriarchy are very connected. There's a long story about how science and the rise of science in the world is connected to the female matriarchal system that's been not covered a lot in our societies. Now, because the females, one more anecdote about this, is because the Eves were originally the most receptive to their teachers, the serpent, sons of the serpent teachers, that was never forgotten by the sons of the serpent. And later when they got to Lemuria, the Eves were given positions of superiority. They were what was called the beloved. And that is where we get the priestess classes and the matriarchal powers coming from. The fact that women were keepers of the secrets, initiators, right, and mystics. Where we get this from comes from Lemuria and the connection to Oceania and the sons of the serpent. That initiating power. Because it was never forgotten that they were the beloved ones. You know in the Bible when it talks about Mary Magdalene being the harlot? That word harlot is a mistranslation of a word called hereduli. Hereduli, I think in Greek. And do you know what hereduli means? Sacred or beloved one. Right? And Jesus, right, was meant to be the immaculate child, right? What's this connection again? And we find in the Bible. By the way, the Egyptian hieroglyphic for woman was, guess what? A serpent. Then Madame Helena Blavatsky of the Theosophical Society said something, because she was on the ball with all of this. The appellation Satan in Hebrew and adversary belongs by right to the first and cruelest adversary of all other gods, Jehovah, not in the serpent which spoke only words of sympathy and wisdom. See that? What she's been saying in her books? Now, also, when you read this term, born of a virgin, since we're talking about the Bible, we have to understand that this word immaculate conception is another covered term for genetic conception, meaning without sexuality. This is a euphemism for conception between a woman and a member of the serpent race. Remember I said that the females couldn't conceive sexually? When they went to Lemuria, that was changed. The sons of the serpent, realizing that the Adams and Eves should have congress together, changed the DNA of the female so that they could mate. But certain times, there was specific women that the sons of the serpent themselves would connect with. And any time that that ever happened, that woman was always known as the Virgin Queen, right? Or the Virgin, when she was not with one of the Adamic race, but with one of the sons of the serpent race. And should there be offspring from that, that being was always called the Immaculately Conceived. Right. So Jesus Christ, Alexander the Great, everybody in the ancient times were saying they were that. Maybe a lot of them were. So just bear that in mind, that when you hear these covered terms, immaculate conception, it means some form of DNA or genetic conception, or at least a connection of congress between one of the races who would have known this. Now, we see motifs of this turning up all over.
Okay, that's the end of that clip. What rings out loud and clear to me, Drew, is that we're seeing the same things occurring today symbolically. The difference being that there's a push to create a technologically based bioorganism, and they're doing this. That's the reason for all the technology they throw at us, to alter the DNA of the human species gradually through the use of this technology, dumbing us down further and making us susceptible to the negative qualities that this technology has, one being microwave radiation or very unnatural frequencies in the realm of electromagnetics. And the pulses and the strange or unusual abnormal waveforms that take place at frequencies across the spectrum. And I wanted to make that point because I think, again, he's right on. This is not, he's not challenging the essence of any religion. He's pointing out the history that has been hidden. Your thoughts on
it? Yeah. And he's making a good line of it. I mean, this guy is the one that wrote the book 2012, In the Age of Revealing. And not only the destruction of Atlantis, which is now a documentary, but he also did the War of the Gods and the genetic manipulation of humankind. It's like he has been dropped off from another planet that has the full truth about what's going on here, and he's giving us lectures on it.
Mm-hmm. If you take into account vaccinations, do you see the and what's happening to women? You know, this Gardasil, for example, the problems that young girls are having health-wise because of these drugs that they're being given. They're being given for one reason, and they come down with all sorts of other maladies, serious ones, life-threatening ones. Mm-hmm. And this whole concept of controlling the people, he's reading this out of the ancient texts, the few copies that survived the book Holocaust, if you will.
And vaccinations are now on the rise again. More dumbing down pregnant women. We had 165 women that miscarried last year because of vaccinations. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot, but ladies and gentlemen, 165 miscarriages because of a miscarriage from taking a vaccine for H1N1, 165, that's unheard of when you start looking at how many pregnant women were given a shot, only less than 5,000 before they stopped giving pregnant women shots.
Yeah, it defies the usual statistics, doesn't it?
And those are the ones that were reported. We're not talking about the ones that are on that were homeopath attempts to cure themselves, or women that had miscarriages in states like Arkansas, where midwives are hired to give birth, and if a woman has a miscarriage on a farm in Arkansas, there's not even a death certificate. Period. A doctor's called out. The remains are given to the family, and it's up to them to dispose of the remains of the miscarriage. Usually, they're buried in on the property, or on a family grave site that's on the property with a small cross, much like you would do with a dog.
Yes.
This is not degrading dogs, because I have two of my favorite soulmates animals buried in my backyard. There was no place for me to take them, so I buried them in my yard. And fig tree grows there. So I've got the love of my two schnauzers close to me. And I look at the fig tree every day.
Yes. Now, just in summation, you heard Michael Tesserian talk about the destruction of this planet. And these fallen angels, as they're described in the Bible, coming to another realm, fleeing, actually being pursued.
Fleeing from another, from a super being somewhere else. Yeah.
Yes.
And they were, and he also said something about they attempted to land on another planet that it was not no longer in this solar, in this system. Well, that would put them on the planet Nurum or planet X.
Mm-hmm. Now, if we were to think outside the box just for a moment, Drew, and this isn't going to be long, consider that you have this secret entity that controls things on this planet, and secrecy is the means through which everything associated with them, which we know comes from evil, is also secret. Are they being secret so we don't find out what they're up to, or are they being secret because they have to, because of who they fled? Original.
Good question.
You know, that's thinking outside the box. What do you think about
that? That's a good question, outside the box. It really is. Because I look at it like we are being controlled by a secret society, and they're pushing for a new world order and the devastation of the population, because they want the devastation of the populations of the world to get down to a manageable level. And I believe in a creator. I believe in extraterrestrials. And in a summation of everything that's been discussed, we have got to unite, Don, those of us that believe in our hearts.
Yes. Now, if you recall, and this isn't by any means, Michael Tesserian brought up the issue of a soul, the issue of being connected with the Creator. He didn't dwell on that, but he did mention that.
Yeah,
That's what makes us different, you see. I mean, if it's spiritual warfare, then you're talking about war between sacred or angelic beings and demonic beings or evil beings.
And demonic beings have no morals. They could kill in a heartbeat with no remorse. But moral beings have remorse when something is killed just for killing's sake. Give you a classic example: the American Indian, when he kills the deer for the family, He prayed for the spirit of the deer. He prayed for the spirit of the antelopes and the buffalo. And the mountain goats. Whenever they killed an animal, whether it was a squirrel or a buffalo, they prayed over it for its spirit because they were in tune with the fact that there's a spirit that created everything. And the American Indian had the morals of such. Contrary to popular belief, the American Indians never, never took a scalp prior to the French Indian Wars. And ladies and gentlemen, who taught the American Indians to scalp and take trophies? White men. The British. The British and the French taught the American Indians to scalp because there was a tariff posted for every scalp that you would bring back to the lodge. You would be paid. So that was where the scalping began.
Was that the beginning of the central bank?
I don't know. I think Rothschild had a lot to do with that, and he was about 60 years later. But there was a lot of international bankers even then.
Well, that there's even another example that war is a racket.
Amen.
Know? Again, and you know, yeah. there's a bit of irony in the fact that every Indian tribe had a prophet, one or more prophets, but there was usually an elder who was considered the most advanced, let's say, in that regard. And when they had visions, they described things in very plain, simple terms. The wheel inside the wheel. They described some things that actually, I think, they were talking about the trains coming in, because they talked about the serpent that had many wheels and much talking. Were those passenger trains? Or were those wagon trains? You know, in a sense, they foresaw the invasion of their lands and mm-hmm. the annihilation.
And their own annihilation.
Yeah.
And that their nation would not begin to come back until the white buffalo and the red buffalo were born together.
Yes, and are we seeing that happen right now?
Oh, yeah. Oh, and there's another thing that they saw the destruction of their plains
mm-hmm.
when the Mormon church murdered and massacred a Arkansas train of settlers that were attempting to move to Seattle, and they were murdered on the plains of Utah. You know, people don't talk about history enough,
mm-hmm.
especially the truth in history.
Yes. Now, this, you know, tonight's show is going to certainly be controversial for those that basically see everything just through their faith. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but there's a lot of information that's been withheld, hasn't there?
Yeah. And that's why my show is dedicated every Sunday to bring out the truth. This next Sunday is going to be on these, on the Nephilim and the intergalactical travel beings that's out there. And people need to understand that I'm fed up with the government, with all its secrets and stealing and lying. We shouldn't have to worry about oil and gasoline cost. We should have electric motors in our cars with recharging circuits to go from New York to San Francisco, back to New York, and back to San Francisco, and back to New York, and back to San Francisco, and the only thing you need is a new set of tires.
We could even have flying cars now.
Exactly.
And never have to worry about even charging them up or worry about accidents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are all things devised to create chaos and to keep chaos going and turn these events into another means of making money. And where does the being evolve? How far do they go? Well, you've got everybody that just can't wait for the next episode of American Idol. They want to go into worshiping a lower vibration every time.
I'd like to interrupt you right there.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Because I went out tonight right after my radio show and visited four retirees at the science project across the street from my home. And all four of them were watching this international auction show on their idiot box. They weren't watching the local news or the international news. They were watching this auction out of London. And I asked him, I said, you always get on my case about the fact that I know so much about the news, and you ask me, how do I know it? And here I see you guys watching a show on the international market of auctioning and values of antiques. And why aren't you watching, if nothing else, watching the CNN news report or the Fox News report or ABC or NBC or CBS News? And that's where the apathy is, Don. People just don't care.
Yeah, it's about having things and getting more things. If times get hard, and everybody's had to do this at one time or another, you sell some things that have served their purpose and still have some value. There's nothing wrong with that. But then they get more things that they don't need, and the cycle just keeps going on perpetually. It never changes.
I got a whole bedroom full of things I need to get rid of. Bring your trailer, ladies and gentlemen. I'll give it to you.
Well, you understand what I'm saying.
I know exactly what you're saying.
It's creating a society of consumers. He described it in ancient terms, that they're going to create beings that produce and they are going to take. That's what he said. They're just going to take and take and take. And why produce when you can just take? So it's not putting blame on the generations that didn't see this, but now we do see it. There's a difference. The difference between us is that our parents and our grandparents and our great-grandparents, in their own way, were not comfortable with what went on, just like we aren't today. But the difference was that they couldn't really see how to extricate themselves from it, because there's a lot more knowledge now that we have that they didn't have. And yet, so few are willing to consider the knowledge or to put the knowledge to use, to put it into action.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's true.
That's
very
the apathy
true.
You're describing. Even if they woke up and smelled the coffee, they're too far behind. They have too many aspects of their consciousness that have to be developed. It would be like taking a newborn. And
that's one of the things that we, you, me, Don, the other talk show host out there, have got to hold our patience and understand that there's a lot of people waking up right now as they wake up, they're 5 years, 10 years, 20 years behind us. And one of the things I critique Colorado Al when he gets on his rant. Oh, I already know that. I saw that 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Well, Radical Al, I have to get on his case and say, look, there's 10,000 people that didn't see that on my News and Views last year.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to suck in the belt and understand that there's only so much we can do, but at the same time, don't go out and chastise your neighbors when you know so much more than they do, and they're just now waking up.
Introduce them to the material. Guide them.
Introduce them to what you just learned, and let them learn from what you learned 10 years ago. And while you're at it, you introduce them what you knew 10 years ago.
Yeah, a lot of people are seeing this. You know, it's one thing to say, well, you know, 75% or 80% of the people in this country are very dissatisfied with what's going on. Well, that's just part of it. That's just an emotion or a feeling. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Now, if they really tackle the issues that make them feel that way, then they have to begin to see what's going on.
Uh-huh.
And every single person, if that person just talked to 10 people, in 3 days, Drew, the whole country would understand what's going on.
Exactly.
Despite what the mainstream media does to program them. And the media is nothing more but a mouthpiece for all these secret societies and governments and everything connected to them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're about out of time, Drew, but
I've only done 3 2-hour shows today and 1 4-hour show.
I know. And
so I thought you'd just go ahead and continue on. We'd do another 2-hour show here. But I'm about beat. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Drew Malone Raines III. I am glad to be on Don Nikoloff's show. I bring him on my network. My website is the 3 W's, amd.elequity.com. Also, you can find me at the 3 W's, amd.heart. Dot, not AMD, it's the 3 W's dot heart, H-E-A-R-T, dot E-L, equity.com. My two websites are eye-openers with news and facts. It's been hidden from you. My News and Views goes out, and it's getting to the point where I may suspend it because I've got things I've got to do for myself, and I'm not going to suspend it altogether. I may just close it down and do News and Views just 3 or 4 days a week instead of 7 days a week. But until that day comes, come to grab the News and Views and find out what's going on out there. And on stories that you're not being told about from hidden news sources. Of course, there's going to be a lot of mainstream news media's reports. But it's done so the Marines and military around the world can have an access from their laptop computers or their iPods to go to my website and pull the news and make it easy. They don't have to read 300 newspapers. They only have to come to my website, and they get the 45 to 60 of the most prominent information and hidden news and views that you need to know about. I want to thank Don Newsom and BBS Radio for allowing me to participate. I want to thank Seth for his information and support behind the scenes. And to you, Don. There's a few of us out here. We're missing our big cheerleader. But the big cheerleader, she's a cheerleader in the sky. And Marianne Ponder, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, God bless. And to all my Marines around the world, Semper Fi. Good night, Chesty, wherever you are.
And I second that, Drew. Thanks for being on the show, and I look forward to your appearance next Thursday on Evident Footprints. In the meantime, keep your powder dry.
Can I go to sleep now?
Yes. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, and tonight's guest, Drew Malone Raines III. I want to thank, again, Wind Talkers Radio Network. Also at BBSRadio.com, Seth Hendrick on the sound. Again, Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night when my special guest will be scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, Jim Murray. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.